if you wanted milk, you would raise your voice and say, Mr. Dilworth wants the milk, please pass the milk. And the person next to you would say, Mr. Dilworth wants some milk, please pass the milk. And this went all down the table to the person who was nearest to the milk, and he would pick it up and pass it back, saying milk for Mr. Dilworth or whatever, some such rigmarole, I don't know. It was all made eating rather difficult, but the food was very good indeed, as I remember. I certainly never remember having any complaints about the food. This is a good time to insert a word of explanation. The upper-class cadets at Maxwell Field were British boys, all of them, or practically so. Now, it seems that the British cadets didn't hold with the notion of hazing and refused to have any part of it. And the long and short of that was that there wasn't any to speak of. There were a few Americans there who would occasionally come around to your room and harass you and meet you on the streets and do things, but mostly not. There was very, very little of it. As a matter of fact, those British cadets, we almost never set eyes on them at any time. And I remember they were doing a lot of night flying at the time. They were flying AT-6s. And I think they slept much of the day and flew all night. Seemed to me there were airplanes flying all night long. And the barracks were quite close to the airfield itself. But what I'm saying is that as far as hazing was concerned, there almost wasn't any. You see, I obviously had a guardian angel even at that time. Though I don't suppose I knew that at the moment. The static and trouble and hollering at we got was from second lieutenants, of whom there were not a few. Now, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, these second lieutenants were already in the Army Air Corps and had applied for flight training and had been accepted, and were going to be put through the same training we were, exactly. Except that, since they were already officers, their roles were somewhat different. And they were given the job, for the most part, of training us and keeping us in line and making us behave. And as you might expect, some of them were nice fellas and some weren't, and a few were bastards. Now, the cadet corps as a whole was run by a captain, a young, feisty little Bantam type fella who strutted about a great deal, and of course his being a captain and a pilot already, he had his pilot's wings, was enormously impressive to us cadets, and we paid lots of attention to everything he said and did, because A, he was a captain, and B, he had his wings. There were a few first lieutenants amongst the trainees, but mostly they were second lieutenants. The people you really had to beware of most were the lieutenants, whether first or second, who were not there for the purpose of undergoing flight training and pre-flight training, and they were, without a exception as I can remember, real bastards. There was one there, can't think of his last name, he was fat, ugly, so and so. And the truth is, you see, that even though I was 21 years old and a college graduate, the fact remained that I was pretty naive, and I was also pretty ignorant about a lot of things. Well, I remember one episode when I had gotten my clothes back from the laundry, and among those clothes was a sock which didn't belong to me. And little old Goody Two Shoes decided he had to go over and report this thing. Well, I don't remember any of the other boys in the room saying anything one way or the other. Maybe they told me not to, but anyway, I'm nothing for it. But I must go over there and report this thing. I think they, and so I did. Now, the procedure for speaking to an officer was very formal. You would march. You would knock once on the door. You never did knock but once on a door. And somebody would say, come in. You'd march up to the officer's desk and stand like a ramrod and salute and say, Aviation Cadet Dilworth requests permission to ask a question, sir. And you would get permission. And anyway, there was this fat lieutenant. I think he was a first lieutenant. And I think his name was Hicks, his last name. And I told him a sad story that I had come across a sock in my laundry which did not belong to me, and it must belong to someone else. And what should I do, sir? Well, he went through. Most of those people didn't have much imagination, and they went through this old rigmarole. They'd just say the same thing over and over, no matter what the occasion was. And it went like this. How long have you been in this outfit, mister? And you'd say, a week. A week? Yes, sir. A week? Yes, sir. How long did you say? A week, sir. A week. And they'd go on the stupid way. They're always begin with, how long have you been here? Or how long have you been this? Or how long? Anyway, I don't remember the rest of it, but somehow I got out of the damn place and was not inclined from any time thereafter to tell people about extra socks in my laundry. But I never got over hating Lieutenant Hicks. I remember that. I used to see a good deal of him. What did we do all day? Well, we got up. Snuffy Smith used to get up first. He got up before you had to. And that was good because he would take his shower and shave and be out of the way when everybody else got up, because there was a lot of confusion with six people trying to get shaved and dressed and all that stuff in not very long period of time, and with not many washing facilities available. People had to take turns, and we got pretty good at it as the time went on. Then we went outside and formed up in formation, were marched with a band down to the mess hall, had breakfast, came back, cleaned our teeth, and came out and got in formation again. And I think the mornings we generally spent going to school. We had classes and all sorts of things. I remember a class in military courtesy and the customs of the service, which was just about that class where they taught you when to salute and whom to salute and how to salute and how you dealt with enlisted men and how you did this and how you did that and what you must never do and what you must always do, and just acquainting you with being in the military and how you conducted yourself. We had a class in simple arithmetic, I remember. We had goodness, I don't know. I'll see if my typewritten letters give me any clue on it. Anyway, we went to classes all morning. Then we came back. to our rooms, probably changed clothes a little bit, got in formation, marched down, had lunch, and marched back to the barracks, and then I guess we had athletics of some sort. That must have been something. And then the latter part of the afternoon was always spent on parade. We have parades. And the different squadrons, the cadets were divided into groups which were called squadrons, and different squadrons would compete with one another in these parades. We'd end up having to pass in front of a reviewing stand, and each day we were judged, and somebody was awarded first place and so on. And so there was a certain amount of friendly rivalry back and forth. In that way, then you had a little time to yourself before supper. Then you formed out and marched to supper and came back and had the evenings free. Though there was a certain amount of homework, as I remember, you had to do. Not very much, but some. Mostly you just sat around talking and polishing brass and keeping your guns shiny and your shoes shined and messing about. We didn't have any duties and nobody bothered us either. I remember a couple of things. Once, one night, an American cadet, an advanced cadet of some kind, came there in the autumn, banged on the door and came in, and ostensibly I think he was there to sort of give us a going over, but the truth was, as it came out, he had just been dismissed from the service for medical reasons, and he was terribly upset about this. And I remember it seemed to me that he spent most of his time that evening telling us how lucky we were that we had not been kicked out, and I think we tended to agree with him. He didn't give us a bad time. Anyway, and I think that's about the way the days mostly went. We went to classes all morning, and we had athletics and parades all afternoon, and nothing in the evenings. And for a while, we had no weekends at all. Every day was done just the same. But after a few weeks, we were let loose on weekends, at least on Sundays, and could go to town and do as we pleased. I see in looking through one of these letters some mention made of various nicknames. Of course, mainly I got called Dill Pickle, and that lasted as long as I was in the service. Or just Dill, or just Pickle. But I see some here in this letter to Mother, that some of the other nicknames I had were Shorty, which is not hard to fathom, Pee-wee, that's not hard, but then one here, Cannonball. Now, how in the world I would acquire a nickname like Cannonball, I can't imagine. The days were often rather tedious, to tell the truth, and we were anxious to get out of there and get into real flying school, but that didn't happen for a while. I do remember some things. I saw my first P-38 at Maxwell Field, and we were standing in formation waiting for go to some meal or other, I believe, and this P-38 landed, and it was the first time I'd ever seen one. I didn't know one airplane from another, but I know now. And I remember that. It was unpainted and all shiny silver, and the propeller blades flashed in the sunlight, and that began my love affair with the P-38, which has never ended, not even today. I also remember one time seeing a P-39. That, again, I didn't know what that airplane was. I'd never heard of such a thing before. But it was a P-39, and I remember it pretty well. And I remember one of the older guys in formation with me saying to me, he said, "You see that? That's a fighter plane." He said, "That's what you're going to fly." He said, "They won't let me fly them because I'm too big. But you are little, and you will get to fly one of those airplanes one of these days. And I envy you." And I remember that. He was right, too, as it happened. All of us seemed to get along well with one another. I don't remember having any conflicts of a personal nature at all. People were pretty well determined to be on their best behavior and to make the best of things, and I would say now pretty successful at it, too. We had to be in a parade one day, and I mean, in this case, not a parade on Maxwell Field's parade ground, but a parade down through the streets of Montgomery. And it was a pretty tedious affair, and I remember that was when I learned that for the most part, parades are not much fun for the people who are in them. They're only fun for the people who get to watch them. And I believe that as far as military parades are concerned, formal things anyway, that's true even now. But we regarded it as a great occasion. And I remember Captain whatever his name was, who was the head of the cadets, and I have mentioned him earlier. He wore a sword along with the rest of his fancy uniform, and we were terribly impressed by that. We didn't even have swords. He used to give the other lieutenants, not the other lieutenants, but the lieutenants there in the cadet corps a bad time. He was always bawling them out for something. And he was pretty rough at it, too, as I remember. And I think he was, not well-liked by the cadet lieutenants. Well, after we had been there for a month, guess what? Came the 7th of December in Pearl Harbor, and I remember that somewhat. I don't remember when I found out about it, but I remember very well that at lunchtime, when we were in the mess hall for lunch, a lot of bigwigs, people of army officers of higher rank, came into the mess hall and had a PA system set up and announced to us that we were at war. And we were very impressed about all this, I'm sure. But I also remember one of the cadet lieutenants, a man whose name I don't remember, but he came into our room one night, and it ended up being just a friendly visit, really. He didn't mess with us or give us a bad time. But this perhaps was on December 7th or 8th, and somebody asked him what he thought the war would mean to us as cadets, and he said, "Well, I don't know," but he said, "I figure you sure as hell will have to mess up pretty bad to get washed out." And that was great comfort to us. I remember we all we're quite happy about that remark, and I believe it was more true than not true, too. The first thing we had to do was to send home all of our civilian clothes. We were no longer permitted to wear civilian clothes at any time, or even to have any in our possession. And The Air Corps took care of shipping these things and all. All we had to do was put them in boxes, which were provided for us, and seal them up and address them, and they came around and took them and never saw them again, or at least not for 4 years. I suspect that there was a good deal of compression in the training schedule soon after December the 7th, and that a training program which was probably geared to maybe as long as 12 months was pushed together until it lasted actually only 9. And I don't remember about Maxwell Field, but when we started actually the flying school, we no longer had any Saturdays or Sundays as such. We trained, had classes in flying all day, every day, without regard for the day of the week. Though that's not to say that we didn't have time to ourselves, time off, I mean. Occasionally we did, especially at night. There wasn't much given during the daytime, but occasionally on a Sunday we had what was called open post, meaning you could leave the post and go wherever you wanted. I might read here a paragraph in a letter that I wrote to my parents at this time. It's a letter dated December 9th. And the paragraph in question says, "I am very ashamed to say that neither I nor anyone I know here is at all bothered by the fact that we are at war. Although I can't go so far as to say, as most of the cadets do, what the hell do I care? I am perfectly unmoved by it all. I have thought it over as much as I was able, and there is only one reason that I can find to account for this. One cannot concentrate intently on more than one thing at a time. We are all concentrating on the business at hand and don't have much time to think of anything else. If we did, we would probably begin to worry. Furthermore, we hear very little about the war, no radio, and the newspapers are very poor, what ones we see." Can't forbear at this point quoting a passage from Shakespeare's Henry V, where he says, "Now all the youth of England are on fire, and silken dalliance in the wardrobe lies. Now thrive their armorers, and honor's thought reigns solely in the breast of every man. They sell the pasture now to buy the horse, following the mirror of all Christian kings with winged heels as English Mercuries. For now sits expectation in the air and hides a sword from hilts unto the point with crowns imperial, crowns and coronets promised to Harry and his followers." Very apt, I think. The longer we stayed at Maxwell Field, of course, the more used we got to it and the better we got at the routine and the fewer problems there were, it seems to me. And I remember one absolutely insane night when I can't imagine how we could have gotten away with such a thing. I just cannot. But what happened was this. As I told you, each two rooms had a bathroom in between it, a bath and shower room, and ours was no exception. And of course we knew the boys in the other room, on the other room on the other side of the bathroom pretty well. And one night we had a huge, I don't know what to call it, sort of water fight, which was not only consisted of throwing buckets of water all over everything in each other, but the guys next door cooked up this plan where they'd soaked a lot of newspapers in water, and then when they started to disintegrate, they made globs and balls and stuff of them and threw those, and of course they stuck onto the walls. And of course we made a tremendous amount of noise in this thing. It went on for half an hour or so, I suppose. And both rooms were absolute shambles by the time we got done with this crazy thing. everybody shrieking with laughter and carrying on. But nobody ever said a word about it. And of course, we had to spend the rest of the evening cleaning the mess up, and so that in the morning when the inspection time came, the place looked the way it was supposed to look. And we did. I remember that. But how we ever got away with it, I don't know. Well, not long after the middle of December, we were all finished with our pre-flight training and split up into groups and sent to primary flying schools all around the South. I, along with Snuffy Smith, Charlie Smith, and Joe Hensler, were assigned to a flying school in Camden, South Carolina, which is just a very small town. I think it's about 30 miles from Columbia, perhaps north of Columbia, I don't know. Anyway, that was the last we saw of the other three boys in the room. Joe Hensler had a car, a station wagon, and he invited the rest of us to drive up to Camden with him in his station wagon, and so we did that. There was Joe and me and Charlie Smith, not Snuffy Smith, he went some other way. Joe and Charlie and some other boy whose name I don't remember. The four of us. And I remember those idiots giving me a bottle of whiskey. I was lying on a bunch of blankets and things in the back of the station wagon on the drive. We went to Atlanta the first night. I remember lying in the back of this stupid station wagon drinking this whiskey straight, and got quite drunk, I suppose. And the only thing I remember clearly about it was that I laughed for 100 miles or so without stopping, or so it seemed to me. And, of course, the other guys thought this was quite funny. And I suppose I did, too, at the time. Anyway, we checked into a hotel in Atlanta. And old Charlie Smith and Joe Hensler had one room. And this other boy, whose name I don't remember, and I had the other room. Another room. And sometime during the evening, Charlie Smith and Joe Hensler conceived the notion of getting a prostitute and bringing her up to the hotel. As far as I can make out, not for their own entertainment, but for mine. Well, I told you already I was naive those days, and it took me a long time to figure out what was even happening, but they came pounding on our door. And somehow I knew something else had happened previously, I believe. I don't know what. But anyway, I knew they were outside the door there with this woman. And I resisted opening the door as much as I could. But the other cadet, whoever he was, somehow managed to get the door open. Then this woman and Joe and Charlie came crowding in there, grinning and laughing and whooping it up, and sort of, what shall I say, sick this woman on me. Well, I was terrified. I didn't even know what to do. And I certainly wasn't going to do anything in front of all those people. And this went on for a certain length of time. It seemed like an eternity to me, but I suppose it wasn't. And eventually the woman got mad, and she gave up her effort and stalked out of the room. And I remember her saying to me, "Well," she said, "I hope you die with a heart on." And Joe and Charlie went out with her. They probably took her to their room. I don't know what happened, but I remember that episode, and I was dreadfully scared, I suppose, and humiliated and embarrassed, and probably a few other things as well. That's about as much as I've ever seen of Atlanta, and I don't think I've seen any more of it since. But I never can even think of Atlanta these days without thinking of that stupid episode. The next day, we drove on up to Camden, and I don't remember the details, but I suppose we arrived late in the afternoon. Now, the situation was this, that the primary flying schools, there were three, you had to go to three flying schools. There's primary flight training, basic flight training, and advanced flight training. And all of them were conducted at different places with different airplanes. But the primary flying schools flew Stearman PT-17s or 19s, I forget which. And they were civilian run. The instructors were all civilians. The fields were civilian owned, but the airplanes, of course, belonged to the Air Corps. And the mechanics were all civilians. But there was a military